Hi, and welcome to Ohio Martial Arts Mind Power. This talk was recorded live from our drive-in meditation class on May the 2nd. Today's talk starts with a story in 1978 from the Hambu Dojo in inner city Fort Wayne, Indiana. I hope you enjoy. Technology in that era. So in any case, I'm in the dojo with some duties and some cleaning and some other things that are taking place, and I hear this noise, because back in those days, in the back of the dojo, we had a heavy bag that was hanging towards the back end of the dojo on a stairwell, and the noise was two quick noises, a loud thud, and then the sound of three chings, like ching, ching, ching. So it was ta-da, thud, ching, 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 ta-da, thud, ching, ching, ching. Ta-da, thud, ching, ching, ching. And it kept going, it kept going, it kept going, almost as relentlessly as a dripping faucet. And I heard it, and I heard it, and I was kind of aware of something that was going on. So I got out of the position I was at the front of the dojo, walked around the corner, and we had a wall that sort of separated, and I saw Hanchi working a double step sidekick into the heavy bag, and the heavy bag would react exactly the same way with that flashing of three times as the buckle on the top of the bag would make that noise. So it was ta-da, thud, ching, ching, ching. Ta-da, thud, ching, ching, ching. At exactly the same cadence, over and over and over. I went back to cleaning, and that sound never stopped. That cadence never stopped. I had to leave the dojo to go to the little shop next door and take care of a few things there. I came back. That sound never stopped. Over an hour and 20 minutes, that sound never stopped. In other words, by himself, what this man did was he repped one thing for an hour and 20 minutes and never changed his cadence. And so I think that if I was going to talk about him for a moment or two, I would tell you that sums up who he is. And it also is a great illustration of what we're really trying to do on a mental level with our meditation. Because what happens is sometimes we start, and the way one of my teachers puts it quite succinctly is they say, we take score too soon. In other words, we start this process of learning to meditate, we start this process of learning this practice, and then a week goes by, 2 weeks goes by, a month goes by, and our life starts to get busy again, and then we think, you know, do I really have time for this? Am I really seeing those profound changes in our lives? And it's like Sifu Brown said, it was one of his teachers that said, do it for 6 months, do it every day for 6 months, and then evaluate whether it's for you or not. And so that's the illustration I suppose I wanted to start with today. So let me tell you a little bit about history, and then we're going to integrate this into some things that hopefully that you will be able to connect with. So here's a second story about my teacher and my teacher's teacher, who I also became a student of as well, O-Sensei Trias. So back in those days, it was probably maybe even a year after the events of what I'm describing, maybe two, Hanchi invited me to go to Arizona, and he paid for my airline ticket to see O-Sensei Trias. And in those days, it was, for the people that practice that style of karate, it was a bit of a pilgrimage. It was a really, really rare and unique treat. I'm not aware of anybody else in the dojo that got invited to go on that trip that year. Now, in later years, there were many people, lots of people, that they sort of opened it up. But this was a personal visitation from student back to teacher. And so, you know, I went and I got a hotel room, and then I went to the Hambu Dojo. I had met O-Sensei Trias several times at different seminars and different events, but I'd never actually been in his dojo. And what I discovered when I went into his dojo was it was not just his dojo, it was a commercial building, but it was his home. It's where he lived, and his bedroom. and he had his cat. If I remember right, his cat was named Junior and lived there with him. And so I got to meet him, but it was all very, very, very formal. And, you know, my teacher, Hanchi, and his wife were coming back to see Sensei, and they had this appointment scheduled, and I went into his office and sat on the floor, sort of at the feet of the master, and my teacher and his wife came in, and the tradition was they brought him a flower to give to him, and they brought him two gifts. They brought him a bathrobe so that he could stay warm in the dojo, and they brought him a gift for Junior the cat. And the love between teacher and student was palpable. And this was a story I thought I would tell you because it really illustrates the difference between the student-teacher relationship today and the student-teacher relationship of yesteryear. Because in those days, the student-teacher relationship was really the guru-disciple relationship. There was this close bond of love, one teacher, one lifetime, one kata, one lifetime, one weapon, one lifetime, one style, one lifetime. And that man, Hanchi Bowles, who made the two noises, thud, ching, ching, ching for an hour and 20 minutes, never varied from that course. And to this day, even though his teacher has now left the body, still looks at that source as his teacher and that style and that as his dharma. So this is an incredible thing. But with it also comes a different relationship towards martial arts today. And so then I have to tell you about one of my other teachers. So in the old days of karate martial arts in the United States, there were really two first dojos that opened, a third in California, but the first two was Osensei Triaz in Phoenix, Arizona, on McDowell Street, or it was North 7th, one of the two. The dojo was in two places. And then the other teacher was a man by the name of Jun Ri. And Jun Ri was in the Washington, D.C. area. Now, it just so happened that Jun Ri, and by the way, Jun Ri's traditions were very similar in the old days. But it just so happened that Jun Ri's dojo was located directly beside an Arthur Murray dance studio. And it also so happened that there was a gentleman by the name of Nicholas Kokinas who owned the Arthur Murray dance studio. Now, Mr. Kokinas was a businessman and a brilliant businessman, and he had owned a lot of businesses, particularly in education. And the thing about Mr. Kokinas, more than anything else, was he had a streak of good in him a mile long. He had a spiritual bent. He had a desire to make the world a better place. But he was not a martial artist. And he knew Jun Ri because they were neighbors. And one thing led to another, and he said to Jun Ri, "Sir, you do this, your martial arts is incredible. What you're doing is incredible. But if we could take some of the principles that I've learned as a business person over the years and integrate those principles into what it is that you're doing, I think it could be better for the student, it could be better for the relationship, it could be better for the community." And Jun Ri worked for a while with lots of resistance, hand in glove with Nicholas Kokinas, to create what I would consider truly the first successful martial arts school in the United States. You see, back in the days when there was this student-teacher-guru relationship, while it may on a fantasy level look wonderful, and it was for certain instances, like Hanchi's relationship with Osensei and my relationship with Hanchi, it wasn't without its problems. Because just like the gurus of India and the gurus all over the world, there were horrible abuses that took place. There was teachers taking advantage of students because, after all, one teacher, one student, one lifetime. And this was a difficult time for the industry as a whole. And so it was Nicholas Coquinas, more than anybody else, that said, martial arts, not so much guru-student relationship, but martial arts as an education. But Nicholas Coquinas did something far better than that, because that had its pitfalls, as you well know, with the black belts that are being given away all over our country. That was no good. But one of the things that Nicholas Coquinas did as well was he taught his form of spirituality to his children. And one of his children was a gentleman by the name of John Coquinos. And John Coquinos was a disciple, if you wanted to use that word, but maybe that's a stronger word, of the great Wayne Dyer. And John became my friend and my mentor, and he introduced me to Wayne Dyer's teaching. And Wayne Dyer's teaching introduced me to Esther Hicks, which has become the foundation of much of the meditational principles that I live by and that I teach and work at every single day. And Nick Coquinas did one other thing which was completely transformational to all of us in our dojo and certainly to my life. Nick Coquinas called me one afternoon. And I was astonished to pick up a phone with the great Nick Coquinas. And he said, "Joe, I understand you are in Toledo, Ohio." And I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Well, there's some rumors here in the Washington, D.C. area about a man in the Detroit area. And he's supposed to have more students that are meditating, that are adults, that are serious about martial arts than anybody. Better than the guys in California, better than the guys in Florida, better than the guys in Canada and Toronto, better than all those guys. Would you do me a favor? Would you drive up there and see him and report back to me what he's doing?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I'd be honored to." And for most of you, you know that the rest is history. And it wasn't until I truly met Sifu Brown that I met a person who was taking the metaphysical part of martial arts and blending it with the physical part of martial arts, that I knew it could be possible and I knew it could exist. And many of you know that was a huge, huge inspiration in my life. So someone asked me the other day, they said to me, well, Sensei, then what is your view of the student-teacher relationship? Since you believe so strongly in what both Mr. Coquinas has taught and what they believed, and you also believe so strongly in what your teacher thought and what your teacher believed, well, how do you view the student-teacher relationship? You know, most of you that have been around me and you've been around other types of teachers, you know I'm very transparent. I'm like, what you see is what you get. I do not want the guru position. I've been very, very clear about that with my students, and though I'm so honored at the respect factor, but I do not want that position. And the reason that I've never wanted that position is, like all gurus, I will let you down. Because when you take on a guru, you are asking a human being to substitute for the only relationship in your life that really matters. You see, my view is it's not one lifetime, one person that's a teacher. Instead, my view is one lifetime, one source as teacher. In other words, we are warriors. We are the warriors of the light. We follow the one teacher. And the one teacher is the voice within. And if anything that I teach or anything that I do or any of the talks or books that I've written point you to the teacher within, then I have done my job. But if at any point along the way I point you to look to me to be that source, my fear is I will take you away from your own guidance. So, this brings us to the philosophy of meditation, the philosophy of what we teach under and why we teach. So in order to do that, I always start the same way. I always say that everything that we teach has the foundation of this principle known as law of momentum. sometimes called law of attraction, law of momentum, I think is more descriptive, but either way, the same thing. And what is the law of momentum? The law of momentum simply means that which you have, you will have more. That which you have not, even that which you have shall be taken away, as the ancient text says. Now, I brought a little notebook to show you an illustration of law of momentum, and this is central to all of martial arts, and that is this principle called the yin and the yang. And so if you look at the yin and the yang symbol, you will notice that there is the white and then there is the dark, and they're equal, except that in the white there is a dark spot and in the dark there is a white spot. And what it means is that every thought that I think, every vibration that I put out, has two polar ends to it. There is health and there is lack of health. There is abundance and then there is lack of abundance. There is joy and there is fear. Everything in our universe works on these two polar opposites of each other. But you also notice in the illustration that within each is a small dot or a small containment of the other. And what does this mean? This means that no matter how dark things are, if I can find the dot, if I can find that one little glimmer of light, that one little point of goodness, and focus on that point of goodness will grow and grow, almost like I was putting extra dots and extra dots and extra dots and extra dots, until that point of goodness will fill up that great thing that I want. But on the other hand, also the opposite is true. The opposite is that I can be in Disney World. I can be living with abundance unimaginable. I can have the things that most people in the world dream of. Yet, if I find a way to complain, if I find a way to focus my mind in the wrong direction, that little spot of complaint can grow and grow and grow, and it can overwhelm and poison even that good thing that I had. So that's the basis that we teach with in martial arts. Another way of looking at it would be to say this. You know, so often in the world, people are pushing and pushing against things and working so hard to achieve things and to overcome things. And, you know, one of the questions that has been asked of me many times is, why does it always seem, you've heard the saying, I know, why does it always seem that nice guys finish last? Why do nice people struggle, especially with all the things that seem to be going on in today's world? And what my teacher says is, if you are to vacuum the carpeting, best be that the vacuum is plugged in. So what most of us do with our lives, because we don't understand law of momentum and we don't understand the deep purpose of meditation, is what we do is we think that through physical effort, through work, we can overcome the fact that we haven't taken the time to just simply plug in the vacuum cleaner. So the question again is why do nice guys finish last? Well, teacher would say, when you have one person who's not plugged in, and another person who's not plugged in, and they go to compete with each other, they go to interact with each other, then it's natural that the meanest, orneriest, angriest, aggressive, hardest pusher would win every single time. But when you plug in, you've completely left that paradigm. You are operating at a level that no one else can possibly imagine. You know, I would really recommend, if you haven't already and you're kind of interested in some of these principles, there's a book by Richard Bach. It's one of the most beautiful books. It's a short read, but it's so brilliant. And it's called Illusions. And in the book Illusions, there's a little fable that he starts with that I think I'm going to tell you today. And this little fable really illustrates our path in martial arts, but our path as meditators as well, and as those who are warriors of the light. And the story goes something like this. I'm paraphrasing, but he was too. There's a creek with flowing water in it. And there are small little creatures who live on the bottom of the pond. And these little creatures cling to the rocks that are there. And they live lives of doing nothing more than clinging. And one day, one of those creatures looks unto all of the others, and he says to the other creatures that are clinging to the rocks, I can't stand this anymore. This business of clinging and holding on, and this life of struggle. Surely there must be more. Perhaps I could let go. And all of the other creatures begin to scoff at him and make fun of him. And they say, you fool, you fool, you fool. If you were to let go, you will surely be taken by the stream and smashed upon the rocks. And finally, after much consideration, one day the little creature says to all the others, it's okay. Rather to be smashed upon the rocks and perish than to live this life of clinging. And therefore, the little creature lets go of the rocks. And sure enough, the stream takes him off of the rock, and immediately he is flung into the other rocks and appears to be crushed and destroyed. And all the other creatures were sure because they got to actually see it with their own eyes. But what the creatures that were still clinging did not see was the stream continued to carry him. The stream carried him farther and farther, and eventually, after he was crushed by the rocks, he was lifted up out of the stream and began moving down the stream further, above the rocks, where he saw other creatures below him, and he appeared to fly, and they looked up and they said to him, oh, a god, a god. And he said, no, I am not a god. Please just let go of the rocks and you can join me. And so it goes. Well, that's a pretty dramatic story, and I had a lot of fun telling it. Nobody will ever accuse me of not being theatric. But I have to tell you that this is the path that we are on, because when you decide that you're going to start meditating and taking 20 minutes out of your day to meditate and start focusing on this internal idea of law of attraction or law of momentum, many people around you will say, no, I want results. I want results. And since many of those people are ornerier than you are, and they've been living a life of struggle harder than you have, you will get smashed by the rocks, by those people. It's just what will happen. But if you can be like my karate teacher, if you can work the cha-chun, ka-wump, ching-ching-ching, again and again and again, and have your dedication as a warrior of the light to your true guru, the guru inside of you, to your internal being, to your internal source, if you can do that and make that your life mission, I promise you, there will come a time when other people look at you and they'll be astonished. And they'll say, why do you not work as hard as everybody else? And you say, well, I'm getting more done. I'm getting up earlier. I'm staying late. Well, you always have a smile on your face. You can't be working so hard. Oh, I am working hard. It's just, it's not hard work. It's joy. So that's my talk today. Understand that there is this idea of law of momentum and law of attraction. And there is this idea of internal guidance, the guru within. And if you can be dedicated to that, then you're probably following my teachings, at least the way that I want you to and want you to enjoy. So those are some quick thoughts today. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Ohio Martial Arts Mind Power. To get more information on all of the things that are happening at our dojo and all the events in our drive-in meditation class where this recording was created from, go to ohiomartialarts.com.